From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Christine Herman. Brian Mackey is away on assignment today. If you've been listening to the program, you know we've been talking about election season. Well, we're now in the thick of it. Early voting for the general election starts today in some parts of the state. And that brings us to our next installment of our ongoing series on building a better democracy. Across the country, it can seem as if county clerks and other officials face more obstacles than ever in getting out the vote. There's the denialism and accusations of fraud that permeate the landscape, and there's the threats that election officials have found themselves in the line of. VoteBeat has been covering all of these issues. It's a nonprofit news organization that focuses on elections and, naturally, voting. As stated on their website, their mission is to help people understand our system of democracy so that they can participate in strengthening it. Brian Mackey spoke last week with Jessica Hoosman. She's VoteBeat's editorial director. Previously, she served as lead elections reporter for ProPublica. Listeners, we taped this conversation in order to align our schedules for today. We won't be taking calls as a result, but please let us know your thoughts. You can send us an email at talk@21stshow.org. And as usual, you can tweet us at 21st Show. That's 21ST Show.
Jessica Hoosman, welcome to the 21st Show. Thank you for being with us.
I'm so excited to be here.
I want to start by talking about the ways in which we are all still living in the shadow of the 2020 election. Big picture, what are we seeing today in the way of denialism and conspiracy theories and so on?
You know, it is still going strong, which is shocking, but this is a movement that has sustained itself. You know, I don't think that a lot of the people who were convinced right after November 2020 that the November 2020 election was stolen have changed their minds. I think a lot of people have even dug further in.
What is, well, it's interesting you say dug further in, because I was about to say, what is this rooted in, right? Speaking of people being dug in, what is driving this?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, it's such an interesting information ecosystem. So the folks that are really running with this tend to keep their messages on very, very right-wing platforms. So Newsmax, OAN, Fox News, Truth Social, Rumble, these are information ecospheres that essentially no one is ever challenged on, especially as it relates to claims about the 2020 election and voter fraud. And so it's hard to penetrate those information bubbles. And I think that the self-referential nature of them has led people to just sort of like sink their teeth into their existing beliefs a little bit further, right? Like, at the end of the day, it's hard to break into a media ecosphere in which they're already rejecting claims of truth. And so it tends to be a bit cyclical.
I want to talk a little bit about how this plays out in the real world then, because obviously at VoteBeat, this is one of your main focuses. You and your colleague, Rachel Leingang, if I'm saying that right?
You are.
All right. You had this piece about, or she had a piece, and you've also written about these demands from conspiracy theorists to election officials for what are called cast vote records. Talk about what those are.
Oh, my goodness. this is such a bizarre thing. So let's just start with what a cast vote record even is. A cast vote record is essentially the digital footprint of a ballot being tabulated. It provides no information about specific voters. It provides no information that would lead you to see which of those ballots was yours and whether or not it was appropriately cast, right? This is a thing that voting systems, and not even all voting systems, this is a thing that voting systems record as, you know, a part of the information that their software always produces, right? Sometimes these include images of the ballot. Most of the time they don't. And so Mike Lindell of MyPillow fame and, you know, perpetual emotional crisis, was at a con, you know, held one of his voter fraud rallies a couple of weeks ago and encouraged the people who were there and watching online to send records request to their county government for cast vote records. And it's clear from these requests that a lot of people believe that these will allow them to check the status of their own vote, but that sort of belies the concept of an anonymous ballot, right? Like if you can figure out how your vote counted, so can the county government. And that is inherently something that we don't want given our system. And so there's a lot of misunderstandings around this, but it also means that clerks have been inundated with these records requests, which are being made in bad faith and for reasons that do not actually, you know, that will not actually come to bear once they get their records back, right? They're going to be disappointed when they get these records. But, you know, we're a month and a half out from an election, and election administrators are already under-resourced. Most election offices in the counties are staffed by a single person who, on top of setting up for a really contentious midterm, will have to be responding to public records requests that ultimately won't be fruitful anyway.
I'm really glad you brought that point up because, you know, I think Illinois has this reputation as a state where, I mean, it's not a swing state. It was not particularly close in 2020. So maybe it hasn't had the focus of an Arizona or Georgia or some of the other states that have, but these requests have been affecting Illinois officials as well. And I want to play a piece of tape. This is from reporter Mark Maxwell at KSDK TV. He talked with Dan Tang, who's the deputy clerk for Madison County, which is part of Illinois in the St. Louis metropolitan area. And Tang here is discussing the Freedom of Information Act requests that they've been getting.
You know, they create a FOIA that no one can comply with. And since no one can comply with it, maybe that's their ammo to say, look, there's a problem here.
Is this a common story you're hearing across the country? And like, what is a request that would be impossible to comply with, right? What does that even mean?
Yeah, I can give you a bunch of examples. This has become very common across the country. And I had one election administrator, and I think that this is the best description of it that I've heard so far, is that it's like a physical DDoS attack, right? Like a denial of service attack, because they're just overloading these offices.
Maybe for our less tech savvy listeners, this is where people use a group of servers to just attack one server and try and bring down a website or something like that.
Right. You overload the website, and so the website goes down, right? And so that is, you know, what these clerks feel like is happening to their offices, because they are, you know, being inundated with requests for things like every copy of a ballot cast in a certain election. So we covered a story a few months ago in Tarrant County, Texas, which is where Fort Worth is. And Fort Worth is an interesting place in Texas because it's sort of, it's the last big urban county that is still represented by Republicans at the county level. And it's changing really quickly. And so the activism there is particularly fervent. And in Texas, ballots become public records after 22 months, and you can look at them. And so these activists have been submitting requests to examine the actual ballots cast in 22-month-old elections. So they got an entire room given to them in the Tarrant County Elections Building. There were boxes and boxes and boxes stacked up so that they could view the ballots. There had to be staff members making sure that they organized them appropriately and treated them appropriately, because there were federal rules around ballot storage. They had to set up a live stream, right? And this was only possible because Fort Worth is a gigantic county, right? And Hyder Garcia, the elections administrator there, has a pretty large staff. Because it is such a large county. That is unique, right? Most county election offices are one person, and that person cannot possibly make it possible for a group of people to be in the office looking at ballots every single day. Most county courtrooms, I don't know if you've been to a county courthouse lately, most county courtrooms, courthouses don't have extra rooms that just lying around for people to use. So these requests, especially stacked on top of each other in the way that they are, become almost impossible. And I think it's becoming clear that the motivation behind filing these requests is not the information that they'll ultimately get, but the chaos that they cause along the way.
Let me take a moment to reintroduce our conversation. If you're just joining us, it's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Jessica Hoosman, who is the editorial director at VoteBeat, which is a news source dedicated to covering, would you say, the machinery of elections.
And I think that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. So have you ever seen anything come out of any of these requests or theories, like a story or, you know, like anyone who has a point ever?
No. And you know, I have been covering this for almost 7 years, and I have been looking in earnest for information that would support any of the claims that voter fraud activists are making. And certainly there are very isolated incidents that these folks can point to, right? There's a handwriting discrepancy in Madison County, Illinois right now that like might result in something, but ultimately was like 30 ballots, right? Not thousands. There has never, to my knowledge, and I think I would, and I, like, I'm pretty confident I would know, any evidence of mass voter fraud of the type that would change a state or federal level election. It's just not happening. There are so many protections set up in our voting system that would prevent that from happening. And I think that the real problem is that your average voter just simply doesn't understand what those things are. And so in absence of understanding the system, it's easy to mistrust it. And I think that that's where we are.
You know, anything that happens tens of millions of times, you know, in a limited time frame, like voting, for example, right, you're going to have some fraud or bad acting. I mean, that's just true throughout human history. But I think you had that key point in there. Enough to change the outcome of an election, right? There's certainly right. All these little ones, you know, ones and maybe even tens of cases here and there. Let me quote from your article. It's tempting to be so overwhelmed by our present moment that we forget that conspiracy theorists have been making life difficult for election officials for decades. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, you know, I think it's really important for people to understand that these claims did not originate with Donald Trump. Like, this was not an original thought. He grabbed on to something that has been spiraling around in very conservative parts. I wouldn't even say conservative, in very extremely ideological sections of the Republican Party for quite a long time. You know, the Bush administration mounted an entire investigation on voter fraud. Alberto Gonzalez was the attorney general, got himself into some pretty heavy scandal over that. In 2008, Greg Abbott, who is the governor of Texas, ran ads showing, you know, obviously dark-skinned men scurrying over a fence, and then talked about how non-citizen voting was a huge problem, which of course it is not. And this has been going on for quite some time. The Heritage Foundation has had a researcher dedicated to compiling incidents of voter fraud for years. And so this is not a new thing. This is something that Donald Trump was uniquely able to pick up on and then exacerbate, but it's certainly not new. And some of the origin of these conspiracies are not exactly what people assume. So the Dominion conspiracy, right? I'm sure your listeners have heard about Dominion and all of the claims that Rudy Giuliani and Donald Trump have made, which have now resulted in Dominion suing for over a billion dollar defamation lawsuit. I mean, like, this is pretty heady stuff, but a lot of the claims that they're making about that system originated in a lawsuit in Georgia that was filed well ahead of 2018 by a group of left-leaning activists who did not trust computer systems either. And so those have been spun up and exaggerated in new form, but they originate there. Or in Gillespie County, Texas, we covered this a couple of weeks ago, the entire election staff, which, to be clear, was one full-time person and two part-time people, left. And original coverage said it was because of threats after 2020, which was certainly true. That was happening. But the threats had started in 2019 because a group of aggrieved activists who wanted fluoride removed from the water system lost a public health measure vote on that, and then decided that it must have been a fraudulent election and sued on that basis. And those people have now joined the Gillespie County Republican Party, and they're all part of a piece. And so, you know, what we're seeing now is not new. It is just louder.
We're going to pause right here. We'll have more of Brian Mackey's conversation with VoteBeat editorial director Jessica Hoosman in just a moment on this first day of early voting for the general election in Illinois. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Christine Herman, sitting in for Brian Mackey today. Let's get back to Brian's conversation with Jessica Hoosman, who's the editorial director for the nonprofit news organization VoteBeat. They talked last week about election administration and the challenges election officials face and the impact that has on voting.
Can we talk briefly about social media and the role that it's playing here in spreading misinformation? And, you know, jumping ahead, how do you even begin to combat that?
You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about this, and it is surprising the amount of misinformation flying around on social media. And certainly I think that Twitter and Facebook have done not a very good job in helping to stop the spread of misinformation on their platforms. But you know, I think one thing that I feel really strongly about is that the media has not historically done a good job of explaining to people how this system works. And the only people we can hold accountable for that is the media, right? Like, it's our job to help people be educated voters. That is what we are here to do. And we have talked a lot about the candidates, and we've talked a lot about the horse race nature of the debates and the politics of it. But we've not spent a lot of time talking about how voting works from the mechanics side, the systems that are set up, the way that counties count ballots, right? And these are all extremely important to democracy, right? One of the main reasons that people stormed the Capitol on January 6th is because they had this bananas idea that Mike Pence could just not certify the election, right? Like, that is ultimately a lack of understanding around election mechanics and the way that they're certified. And so I think that if the media does a better proactive job explaining these things, it will be harder for misinformation to spread. You know, I don't know that I have any great answers about how to convince people who already believe this that it's not true. But I do think that we can prevent more people from tipping into this level of conspiracy if we bolster our reporting with better information, such that when false claims are made, the people who hear them say, oh no, like, I already know how that system works, and this doesn't make sense to me, right? Like, we need to arm people with information such that the misinformation doesn't penetrate.
Yeah. And to do it before it's critical, right? Before the lights are flashing red after an election. Yeah,
absolutely. And you know, I think that if journalists had a better working understanding of how elections were, how elections operated and ballots were tabulated in their county, well ahead of an election, they would be able to tell which little sparks of misinformation were going to catch on, right? Like if you understand a system really well, you can take a look at the field of wild claims that are being made about it and sort of intuitively understand which ones are going to catch on popularly so that you can spend your time on those, right? People are making all sorts of wild claims, and some of them are not worth addressing or rising to the level of a debunk, right? But some are, and it's often hard to discern which is which. And the only way that you can is if you have a really strong understanding of the system itself.
You know, one of the things that's also out there are threats to election officials. We talked a little bit about them being bombarded with information requests and making their jobs hard, but some of their jobs are dangerous now. You recently attended the conference of National Association of State Election Directors, or I should say earlier this year, I think you attended the conference of the National Association of State Election Directors. Can you talk about that experience, especially in the context of the security efforts you saw there?
Oh goodness. Yeah. This was frankly pretty troubling. You know, this conference of which you speak, the National Association of State Elections Directors, which I know sounds absolutely thrilling, is a conference that I have been to 11 times. And I have
never...
Thank you
for your service.
Say that again.
Thank you for your service.
Somebody's got to do it, right? Might as well be me. But I have never seen security of the type that was necessary at this conference, which this year was held in Madison, Wisconsin, which is a state not far from where your listeners are, that is full of its own brand of election conspiracy theories. And the hotel, which was a hotel that was very close to the state capitol and was very used to holding big events for state legislators, right, had to take incredible steps to make sure that the elections administrators from across the country who'd gathered there remained safe. So they did bomb sweeps on a daily basis. They had full-time security monitoring the conference that had been trained by both the FBI and CISA, which is the Cybersecurity Office of the federal government. They discouraged participants from wearing their name tags in public settings in the hotel and outside of the hotel. We were actually told not to wear our name tags outside of the hotel because that would make them targets. And so it was kind of a harrowing experience. And you know, I think the saddest thing to me was that the election administrators who were there were not bothered by it at all. And it's not because it's not inherently troubling. It's because they're used to it by now, right? Like it's been 2 years at least of threats and increased security and steps that they never imagined they'd have to take. And so I think, you know, it was interesting to watch how easily they adapted to the pauses for bomb sweeps and the additional security checks and the requirements around name tags. It was an interesting experience.
As we come to the end of our time together, we've talked about on this program, voting is obviously, it's a political act, right? You're choosing someone to represent you in government, but it really seems that the machinery of voting has become politicized in recent years in a way that harms our democracy. Can you talk about what that costs us?
Yeah, you know, I think that voting systems are so important in a way that most Americans don't understand, right? We have this really profound concept of a secret ballot, and that is pretty integral to American democracy. And when people make claims that are not true about voting systems and the way votes are tabulated, it's not only harmful to the people who cast ballots, who might be discouraged from casting those ballots, it is harmful to the concept of a secret ballot. And I'll give you a really specific example, right? There are lots of people who think that the panacea to every problem that ills American elections is hand-marked, hand-counted paper ballots. That would make it impossible for people with a disability to cast an anonymous ballot. And I don't think that people consider the implications of that when they talk about, when they offer these like full-throated criticisms that are often very much not true about ballot marking devices or voting machines, right? If you, for intellectual or physical reasons, cannot mark a ballot on your own without assistance, then you can't use a paper ballot. And there are federal laws that require accessible voting options, like the Help America Vote Act of 2002 requires machines be made available for people who have these disabilities so that they can cast an anonymous ballot without assistance. It would be impossible for a person with a disability to cast a paper ballot with a pen without assistance, which means that we've taken away their right to an anonymous ballot, right? We've made the right to anonymity in the polling booth contingent on your physical and intellectual abilities. And we have the tools to make it so that everyone, regardless of their abilities, can do this and do it safely. And so I think that the direct result of this misinformation is not just that people become discouraged, but that people literally cannot participate.
We've talked a lot about the problems that are out there. If somebody's listening and they're thinking, oh my gosh, what can I do? What do you tell people, everyday people, right? Not the you've talked about what the media needs to do, and I take that criticism seriously. But what can everyday people do about this?
Go be a poll worker. It is. I know I say this all the time, but it is so fun. And I know that you have to get up early, and I know that it's fiddly, and I know that it is often a little tedious, but it is really rewarding to participate in democracy in such a hands-on way. And I especially recommend this for people who are concerned that they might not fully understand the system or distrust it in any way. You know, I often talk about my mother, who herself, she's a conservative Trump voting Republican and had the same concerns about voting issues that lots of other Americans do. And so she decided to go be a poll worker and was actually the precinct captain in her former middle school in Garland, Texas, which was very cute, and is now very well versed in how voting works and has increased her own confidence significantly because the concerns that she had were ultimately addressed as part of poll worker training. And she got to sort of physically see how the election was administered because she helped administer it. And I think she's really changed her mind about a lot of voting issues and has helped her friends understand this system as well. And so that's a really powerful thing to do. And even if you only do it once, I think it will radically change your relationship with local and county government.
All right, don't man the barricades, man the card tables at your local
yes.
precinct. Jessica Huseman is the editorial director of VoteBeat. Thank you so much for doing what you do and for sharing your work and reporting with us today on the 21st show.
Thanks so much. This was fun.